Good evening. Welcome to our assembly. Welcome to those visitors who are with us tonight. Thank you for coming. Last week I started talking about miracles. And wasn't able to get done with everything that I wanted to say. And my wife often suggests that I divide my sermons into two parts. I usually don't. But probably a good idea in this case. We talked about the fact that miracles can be defined in such a way by a lot of people to make them sound like they're common. And you hear people say things like this, that they saw a miracle or it was a miracle, or they believe in miracles. And I'm not dismissive of people who say, because it at the very least it exemplifies a faith in God, which is becoming rarer in the world, and I appreciate the fact that people might be willing to ascribe some happenstance to God, and that's good in a way. But we need to define miracles the way the Bible defines them, and to understand what they are and their function in biblical terms. And that's what we did last week. And we found that technically, or truthfully, the way the Bible refers to a miracle is a violation of natural processes. It's not an astounding event. It's not an amazing event. It's an impossible event. It's an event that cannot physically, naturally occur. And therefore, the only possible explanation for it is that God has intervened into nature and working outside of nature, done something truly phenomenal. And God has done that. He's done it on many, many occasions in the past, and the Bible records these events. But typically, God would do this in order to make a point. And that really is the reason that God worked miracles, to make clear his involvement in something, and particularly to make clear that he is sending a message, that he is revealing a truth, and the signature, the calling card, the thing that proves that the message is in fact from God is the miracle, because only God can work miracles. And that's how miracles are defined and referred to in the Bible. And then we talked about the fact that these miracles were public and visible and something that could be seen by everyone and was undeniable and can be examined. And in most cases, it had a very visual and publicly visual aspect to it, where you could see that a person had a withered limb and suddenly the limb was made whole. You could see the person was dead. Everybody knew they were dead, and suddenly they're raised from the dead. Things like that. That's really a miracle, which doesn't really apply to most of the things that people call miracles today. And so what we would say is that while I would never deny the possibility that God could work a miracle on any occasion that he deems suitable, we do not see things happening today that fall in the same biblical definition of a miracle. We don't see God acting in ways that violate natural law. And certainly no indication that God is revealing new truth or revelations or anything like that. There are lots of religious groups who believe in modern-day revelations, but in nearly all of those instances, those revelations contradict what God has already revealed, and therefore it is clear that those revelations or those messages are not, in fact, from God at all, nor are the miracles that they claim to support them happening. Of course, that's a subject to your own inspection and your own investigation, but that would be my conclusion. And the miracles recorded in the New Testament are sufficient to accomplish the purpose for which God worked miracles. The miracles in the Bible confirm the message that is revealed in the Bible, and the requirement for modern-day miracles is just not there. That's what we talked about last week. And so that leaves us with two more questions. What about providence and what about answered prayer? Where do these things fit into this discussion about miracles? And you know, what people claim are miracles or acts of God today. And that's what I'm going to talk about for the rest of my lesson tonight. Miracles and providence, they actually have a lot of things in common. Both of them are acts of God. A miracle is an act of God. When God acts providentially, that is an act of God as well. And so you could say that they are both an intervention. That things were going along a certain way and would have progressed in a certain way, and yet God has intervened. God has acted. Both of them are powerful. A miracle, obviously so, but providence, really no less so. In terms of their effect, the consequences, their benefit, providence, a providential act of God, can be just as powerful, just as effective as a miracle. And both are needful. Now I say, and I think this is true, that miracles generally, nearly always, coincided with God delivering a message or revelation and was intended to confirm that revelation, but they were also nearly always beneficial, needful, helpful, salvatory, something that helped. Providence is the same way. Providence, when God acts through providence, through answered prayer, God is helping. And as I've said, in many instances, it's just as helpful and just as effective in providing benefit as if God had worked a miracle. So what's the difference between them? Well, I've already kind of hit the ideas, but the difference is that a miracle is obvious to all that God has acted, and when God acts through providence or answers prayer, it's not obvious to all that God has acted. In fact, one must accept on the basis of faith that God has acted when God acts through providence or answers prayer. That's because, and this is a definition that you'll often hear, that a miracle is a violation of natural law, whereas through providence God acts within natural law. I'm not entirely satisfied with that definition, and it may be a little bit of semantic criticism, but in my opinion, when God acts to answer prayer providentially, I think he still is intervening in nature and changing the course of nature, the difference being that it's not obvious that he's doing that. That a skeptic, an unbeliever, can see that same sequence of events and say, well, that's a perfectly natural event, when in fact it wasn't. But he doesn't know that because it's not obvious. The believer who has prayed for God's care and God's help sees this same sequence of events that the skeptic sees as natural, and he sees that and he says, I believe that God did that. I believe that God acted in answer to my prayer. And the skeptic has his opinion and the believer has his opinion, and it is an opinion that is instructed by faith. But in both instances, it's not obvious. It's not something that's undeniable. Whereas a miracle, even a skeptic, even an unbeliever who sees a true miracle pretty much has to acknowledge that something phenomenal has happened there that he cannot explain. And so that would be the distinction that I would draw. And you can have your own opinion about that. As I have always noted, when I express my opinion, you have the right to be wrong if you wish. Mark chapter 11, verse 24. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. The nature of answered prayer does involve faith. It does. doesn't mean that what has happened is not marvelous or amazing or good or beneficial or an act of God. It's just something that still involves a measure of faith. Philippians 4 and verse 6, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And that's exactly what we ought to do. We ought to trust and believe that God will act. Be thankful when He does. Through faith, see His answers to our prayers and do something about it. And I, myself, and anyone here who is a true believer can attest to the benefit and occurrence of answered prayer. And it doesn't particularly matter to me how God answers my prayers. When I ask God to help me, to save me, to do something for me, to do something for someone I love, it doesn't have to be a miracle. It doesn't have to be something that's overt, that makes the 6 o'clock news. It's just as beneficial and just as welcome. And for it, I am just as thankful. If I was drowning in the ocean, there's no particular reason why I need for God to suspend the natural function of H2O in order to allow me to walk ashore. It's just as helpful if a boat suddenly shows up with someone who throws me a line and pulls me in. Either way, I am saved. One is providential. The other would be a miracle. It doesn't matter what gets me to shore as long as I'm helped. And the man of faith sees the providential help as just what it is, the help of God. James 5:16, therefore confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. The effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. Answered prayer does accomplish much. Great deal, in fact. In that particular context, James refers to the drought that Elijah prayed for, and it didn't rain for 3 years, and then he prays and it rains all of a sudden. One would see that as a miracle. And it likely was, and what made it a miracle was the declaration of Elijah, the fact that he stated what was going to happen, and then it happened. And obviously the revelation from God through the prophet that God was intervening. But it could not rain for 3 years. It could do that. That would be quite amazing. But through some natural processes, in some places, it might not rain for 3 years. And then it might suddenly rain. The point is, it was helpful. It was good. It was good that Israel had to go through that period of not having rain and then suddenly having rain. And in the end, that's what really matters. God acts, God intervenes, God does things, God helps. We believe that. I don't need to see a miracle. I don't even need to know whether it was a miracle or not. And that's what the man of faith understands. 1 John 5 and verse 14, this is the confidence that we have before Him. If we ask anything according to His will, He hears us. And that's what the man of faith believes. He believes that God hears us and that God does something, that prayer is not just, you know, something you say, you express a desire, a wish, and then maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't, because it was going to happen or not happen anyway. That's not answered prayer. That's the absence of God's intervention. And I don't believe that that's what happens. I believe God hears and God responds, and that something happens that otherwise would not have happened. And that's typically what we mean by answered prayer. Now, let's look at some examples in the Bible. You know, God does a lot of things in the Bible, and it's not always miracles. Let me give you some examples, and you may think I'm wrong about some of these, but, you know, you're welcome to that. Genesis chapter 20, Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maid so that they bore children. Now, I don't know that that was a miracle or that it was obviously a miracle to anybody. But it happened. They were sick. They got better. There was a problem. The problem went away. What changed? Well, Abraham prayed and God did something. It wasn't necessarily intended to prove anything. It was God's response to Abraham and Abraham's prayer. Genesis chapter 25, verse 21, Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren, and the Lord answered him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Well, was that miraculous? That's really a matter of semantics. Childbirth is natural. A woman can go a long time without having a child and then naturally just have a child. It doesn't necessarily have to have a miraculous explanation. In this case, it was in response to Isaac's prayer. And we only know that because we're told not only that Isaac prayed, but that the Lord, on behalf of his wife, you know, and the Lord answered him. See, the Lord did that. But if a man had a barren wife, or a wife didn't have a child for a long time, and then suddenly she did have a child, you wouldn't necessarily think that God had done anything. Now, a man of faith could say, well, I prayed for that and it happened, and I believe that God did that, and he will and should say that. But a skeptic, an unbeliever, would look at that and say, well, good for you. It's not really a miracle. But it is answered prayer, and it's just as powerful and just as needful and meaningful. 1 Samuel 1 and verse 27, the prayer of Hannah after she had her child, after praying to the Lord, for this boy I prayed, and the Lord has given me my petition, which I asked of him. And that's exactly how we ought to respond when we pray for something, and it happens, an answer is given. It may not even necessarily be the answer that we wanted or in quite the way that we wanted, but we perceive, we understand, we recognize that somehow God has met a need. Our response should be, thank you, God. You did that. I believe you did that. We shouldn't be reluctant to acknowledge that or say that or to express that. Doesn't mean that we're saying it was a miracle. We're just saying that God answers prayers, and that's a wonderful thing that he does for us. 2 Chronicles 33 and verse 13, Here's a fellow, Manasseh, who was a terrible, awful guy. And God punished him by having him sent away into captivity. And he was in terrible conditions, and he prayed. He prayed to God. And the Lord was moved by his entreaty and heard his supplication and brought him again to Jerusalem, to his kingdom. And Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. And there's nothing miraculous about an evil king running afoul of a more powerful evil king and being taken prisoner and being mistreated. Nothing unusual about him being in prison for a while. There's nothing miraculous about him being released and sent back home again. The only reason that we know that God was involved at all is because the prophet tells us that Manasseh prayed and Manasseh got what he prayed for and Manasseh believed that the Lord had done that, which is exactly what he should have believed, and what we should believe as well. That doesn't make it a miracle. It makes it answer prayer, which is an amazing, powerful thing. Nehemiah 2, 4 through 5. Nehemiah heard the news about how the walls around Jerusalem were in disrepair, and his master, the king, asked him what was on his mind. Did he have something to ask him? And right at, in that moment, Nehemiah prayed. He prayed to the God of heaven. Doesn't even say what he prayed about, but obviously he prayed about the situation, because then he mentions to the king, my homeland, the city of my people is in disarray. The walls are all broken down, and I would like to rectify that. Send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. And of course, the king grants his request. He's able to go back and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, and that's what the book of Nehemiah is all about. It's answered prayer. Now, an unbeliever can look at that and say, well, you know, the king was just being nice to a guy that he held in high esteem and granted him this favor, and there's nothing miraculous about sending this dignitary back to one of the territories of your empire to rebuild the wall of the city. That's not miraculous in any way. Well, maybe not. It doesn't mean that God didn't answer his prayer. I think he did. Think about another example of that same kind of thing. I don't have it on my screen, but Esther, the book of Esther. You know, the word or the name God does not occur in the book of Esther, nor does the word prayer occur in the book of Esther. And yet, God is present throughout the book, and people looking to and trusting in God is throughout the book. And when Esther has the opportunity to petition the king, Ahasuerus, to save her own people, she's reluctant to do it because if he is not welcoming of her advance, her request, her life might be forfeit. And so she doesn't know whether to do it or not. And her uncle, her cousin Mordecai, says, if you don't do this, deliverance will come from somewhere else. He doesn't even mention God. And so there's an expectation that there's going to be deliverance somehow, some way. And he says, how do you know that you haven't come to this moment and find yourself in this very position so that you can intervene and do something to save your own people? Now again, there's no mention of God, but there's the clear implication that God provides, that there's providence. And the only thing that's mentioned by Mordecai and Esther are fasting. They talk about fasting. But implicit in that is the praying that goes along with the fasting. How many thousands and thousands and thousands of Jews must have been praying to God, having heard that this law had been passed that was about to bring about their destruction? They were all going to die. And they're praying to God and they're asking for his deliverance. And here's this one young woman who has the opportunity, because she's the queen and she's favored of the king, and she has the opportunity to go to the king and ask for his help. And she's sitting on the fence trying to decide whether to do that or not. And here these people are praying. And she says, yes, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and I'm going to petition the king. And if I live, I live. If I die, I die. Well, that's providence. God, it's not a miracle. There's nothing in there that indicates that there's a miracle involved. And yet, a very powerful deliverance by God. Very powerful. Answered prayer. And that's what we're talking about. Romans chapter 15, last example. Paul writes to the Roman brethren. He wants to come see them. He's intended to come see them. He's been delayed and frustrated in his efforts to come see them. So he says, I've got to go back to Jerusalem, deliver this money that has been collected by the saints to the four saints in Jerusalem. And when I'm done with that, I'm going to come see you. But here's the deal. There's a lot of people in Jerusalem who hate me and want me dead. So pray for me, he says. I pray, you know, I'm praying, join me in my struggle by praying to God for me. Pray that I may be delivered from the unbelievers in Judea and that my service in Jerusalem may be acceptable to the saints there. Well, there's a long story that we read at the end of the book of Acts whereby Paul makes his way to Jerusalem. He is nearly killed, mobbed, lynched there in Jerusalem, but he is spared. He spends 2 years in prison in Caesarea, finally is transported by under guard as a prisoner to Rome, and finally gets to communicate with the brethren in Rome. Now, as it's long been pointed out, God answered his prayer and got him safely to Rome. It wasn't necessarily the way that he probably anticipated on a prison ship after spending 2 years in prison in Caesarea. And after going through a lot of difficulties and challenges, including the shipwreck, of course, on the island of Malta. And throughout that, there's very little by way of what you call a miracle. A lot of remarkable events, a lot of close shaves, not really miracles. And yet God answered his prayer and provided for him to get to Rome and to be spared from his own people, from the Jews. And that's answered prayer. It's a marvelous and wonderful thing. And Paul would be the first thing to say. And he did say, by God's help, with God's help, I'm here. And that's exactly how we ought to feel about it. And through faith, for us, it's just as great and powerful and meaningful as a miracle, really, in terms of giving thanks to God. We believe in the miracles of the Bible, and we believe in the message of salvation that they confirm, and we believe that God answers prayer through providence, and that providence is marvelous and amazing and powerful and beneficial to us. And that's my sermon on miracles and providence. God has provided through both miracles and through acts of His grace a way to save your soul. I can't work a miracle for you tonight, but you can be saved tonight. And that is so much more meaningful than any miracle that you could ever see in this world, to have your soul saved. To spend all eternity with God in heaven on the basis of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. That is what God has done for you. That is what God has provided for you. You need to ask for His forgiveness through Christ. You need to pray and ask for Him to take your sins away as you're buried in the waters of baptism, and appeal to God for a good conscience. And if you will do that, God will give answer to your prayer in a manner that is as powerful as anything that God has ever done to bring about your salvation through Christ. It's an amazing act of God. He's provided it for you. Won't you take advantage of that provision tonight by coming forward and being baptized into Christ as we stand and sing?